You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
Well, active asset managers are under huge pressure all over the world. Alan Gray is no exception. It's got total assets under management of 518 billion rand at the end of June, with its unit trusts having just less than 300 billion in 2019. Still a massive player locally and the country's largest private investment firm. But if you look at a lot of the firm's funds in Alan Gray and Orbis, they have underperformed their own benchmarks by a margin for 5 years. And we've seen an issue of late around fees emerging in an environment where there are low returns. Fees are always going to bubble up to the surface. Well, Chief Investment Officer Andrew Lapping is going to be leaving Alan Gray towards the end of this year as his 20th year at the firm comes to a close. And Duncan Artis will take over the reins as Chief Investment Officer from Andrew, effective from the 1st of September. On Spring Day, Duncan, welcome. I think for many long-suffering investors, it's with the hope that that spring will come with renewed growth for Alan Gray. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. I think first of all, people must obviously remember that the South African stock market, when measured in rand, is flat since 2014. So I think it's not just really relative returns that are important; it's the absolute returns. And our stock market has been flat for 6 years, and of course, within that period of the stock market being flat, you've had the massive rise of Naspers, and I guess Naspers combined with Prosus now, as well as SA Brewery is being bought out at a very high price by Anheuser-Busch. And if you exclude those stocks, I mean, our stock market is down quite significantly if you exclude the big sort of dual listed shares. So there hasn't been much absolute returns available for investors. And what we've generally seen is we think a lot of investors have kind of been putting their cash in income funds. In other words, looking for yield because equity returns are being so low. And I guess we're pretty excited at the moment the way funds are positioned because almost everyone and the indexes, obviously, I think the top six shares make up 50% of the index now. So, Naspers, Prosus, BHP, Anglos, and Richemont, I mean, those have been really the only shares that have outperformed, and we think some of them are quite expensive now.
And in many ways, you are taking over at a good time when returns have been depressed for such an extended period. History tells us that good times for equities must be just around the corner. That said, you're also entering the position when the industry as a whole is under a lot of pressure to justify its fees relative to lower cost index trackers. What's going to be your focus as you take over the reins on the 1st of September?
Well, I think, what we've done, we've outperformed for 46 years, so we've done something right over that long period, and you don't mess with something that works. So generally, we know we want to be a learning organization. We know the competition is, I always say, each unit of outperformance today is more valuable than each unit of outperformance when I joined the firm back in 2001, because obviously the competition in the industry has increased. So really what we focus on is just making little tweaks to the process that improve us year by year. As an example, funny enough, we're more known for managing equities, but where we've performed well the last couple of years has actually been in our fixed income, and that's because we put a lot of focus on the fixed income process a couple of years ago. But the one good phrase for asset managers, you just want to make less mistakes than everyone else, and that's one way to outperform.
Yeah, it's equally true on the sports field as well. And one can apply it to Liverpool, who are going to be lifting that trophy after 30 years and a long wait. They just made fewer mistakes and were more consistent. And I suppose it sounds simple to say, to achieve in practice as a chief investment officer, that's your job, to try and focus the team on that. You're very well known to clients of Alan Gray. As you said, you've been with the firm since 2001. You're a regular market commentator. But for listeners, just share your background with us and what your vision really is for the business.
I joined Alan Gray in 2001 as an analyst. I actually got interviewed by Dr. Gray himself, which was great at the time. And Simon Mollet was the chief investment officer. And I think everyone forgets back then, Alan Gray only had 70 employees and now have 1,350. But the investment teams remained pretty much the same size. We're just over 20 people. And then I started as an analyst, and then I started managing money in 2005. So I've been managing sort of equities and balanced portfolios for the last 15 years. And I guess, in those 15 years, we've seen quite a bit in South Africa. We've seen, the GFC, We saw Nenegate, you know, the market going sideways, now the pandemic sort of fall. And, you know, what really matters to me, as you mentioned, you know, most investors, you know, underperform the index. And that's because it's difficult. You know, there are lots of psychological barriers in your way at the scorecards in front of you sort of every day. And really what we try to do is, you know, the ownership of the firm, you know, where we're owned by the foundation, you know, allows us to take a long-term view and try to get away from that short-term thinking that makes managing money so difficult. So we always say that, you know, if you took an average investment team and you put them into the Allenware structure, we think they'd produce above-average results. You know, everybody, most of our competitors are smart, hard-working people. Everyone's got a philosophy, but you can't patent it, right? It's not like an iPhone. You can't put a patent on something. So really, it's sort of that ownership that allows you to take a long-term view and having a good process. If someone says, well, you own British American Tobacco in your portfolio, you should be able to explain in 5 minutes how that share got into the portfolio. And we think, you know, that's what we really concentrate on over time.
And then just briefly, your long-term view, it would be interesting, I think, to listeners to hear your view on South Africa in a long-term perspective. Many people now looking at the crisis in the here and now, if you were to look out, say, to 2029, we're a year out from the National Development Plan and the goals and coming to the end of the Ramaphosa administration, if he has a second term, where do you see South Africa in 10 years' time?
Well, I think in the short term, South Africa is in trouble. So we went into the pandemic already with very weak finances. And I think a lot of people forget that it's simplistic. They look at what's happening in the US and Europe and they say, why not do it here? Well, we don't have a reserve currency, right? If the central bank, even at a hint at quantitative easing, we think the rand would weaken significantly, which obviously then brings big inflation, raises the cost of capital, et cetera, and then hurts, you know, investment across the economy. For me, you know, really the only way to fix South Africa is to grow. You can imagine if we'd grown, like many of our emerging market peers, even with one or two interruptions, maybe during the GFC and now, if we'd grown at 4% real, add 4 or 5% inflation, you know, you compound the economy at 9% for a number of years, the economy would be massively larger than it is now. And I think a lot of the sort of societal ills we see across the country, a lot of those would have been helped by, you know, people having well-paying jobs and the economy being far larger. So I do think, you know, if you're running a 15% budget deficit, which we're going to this year, and you're paying 10% on your debt, that's very, very different to, you know, other countries running big deficits, but where they're effectively paying zero on the interest rates. I heard you talking during the early discussion about the Reserve Bank cutting rates, but for our government, that makes no difference, right? Because their borrowing cost is a lot higher. The 10-year bond is between 9% and 10%. Yeah, inflation's 2 or 3, so they're paying 6% real to borrow. And our sort of nominal growth rate in the economy is lower than the cost of our debt. And we need to swing that the other way around. We need our growth to be higher than the interest rate we're paying our debt. Otherwise, you know, this debt is just going to compound against us. And I guess what it takes is difficult political decisions. And so far, if you look over the last number of years, we haven't made those decisions. And that's unfortunate because we get left behind.